What if the solution to climate change has been beneath our feet all along? While politicians debate carbon taxes and scientists model apocalyptic scenarios, a quiet revolution is happening in pastures, rooftops, and degraded rangelands across the globe. It's not about advanced technology or billion-dollar infrastructure. It's about understanding something we've overlooked for centuries. Soil isn't just dirt. It's a living, breathing carbon bank that could help reverse atmospheric damage while feeding the world. This isn't theoretical. Ranchers in drought-stricken New Mexico are watching springs flow again. Brooklyn rooftops are growing vegetables. Australian farmers are harvesting two crops from the same land. The common thread? They've stopped fighting nature and started working with carbon's natural cycle. Carbon isn't the villain in our climate story. It's the hero waiting to be recognized. It's stardust, formed in ancient stars, promiscuous enough to create 10 million compounds. Most crucially, it's the glue holding the soil food web together. When plants photosynthesize, they pump liquid carbon through their roots to feed underground microorganisms, which in turn break down minerals and facilitate water delivery, creating humus that holds four times its weight in water. A handful of healthy soil contains more organisms than all humans who've ever lived. Billions of bacteria, miles of fungal threads, countless protozoa and nematodes. This underground ecosystem runs our planet, yet we've spent 5,000 years destroying it with plows. When John Wick removed cattle from his California ranch in 1998, invasive species overtook the land. Reintroducing cattle through rotational grazing healed it rapidly. Biogeochemist Wendy Silver discovered his composted plots captured 50% more carbon than untreated areas. The soil teems with mycorrhizal fungi, filaments forming symbiotic relationships with plant roots, trading nutrients while producing glomalin, nature's superglue that binds soil particles and sequesters carbon for up to 50 years. Plowing destroys this network, exposing organisms to killing sunlight and tearing fungi apart. No wonder synthetic fertilizers became necessary. We'd killed the natural fertility system. Tom Sidwell's JX Ranch in eastern New Mexico looked hopeless in 2004. Grass depleted, soil eroded, water tables fallen. Neighbors thought him crazy when he divided 7,000 acres into 16 pastures and implemented Aikido ranching, working with dryness, not against it. The principle: graze intensively but briefly, then rest land for 105 days. Never let cattle stay longer than 7-10 days. Think like bison herds. Within 6 years, native grasses returned, livestock capacity increased 25%, and a spring grew from 0.25 to 1.5 gallons per minute. During the 2011 drought, Tom sold nearly his entire herd to rest the grass while neighbors kept cattle and watched pastures strip bare. When rain returned in 2012, the Sidwells restocked while neighbors were forced to destock. The lesson? Properly managed cattle aren't land destroyers, they're healers. Their hooves break soil crusts, manure feeds microorganisms, grazing stimulates growth. The key is mimicking wild herds, concentrated, then gone. For 5,000 years, humans plowed. It seemed logical to break up soil, bury weeds, and prepare seedbeds. But in 1943, agronomist Edward Faulkner published Plowman's Folly with a radical claim: nobody has ever exposed a scientific reason to till. Plowing destroys soil structure, kills beneficial microbes, and exposes carbon to oxidation. Dorn Cox, a young carbon farmer in New Hampshire, embodies this revolution. With a Wall Street background, he views soil as a bank where carbon deposits create compound interest. His experimental plots combine organic farming with no-till techniques, building life rather than depleting it. The revolution is philosophical. America operates on scarcity thinking. Resources are insufficient, competition is necessary, there are winners and losers. Dorn's soil tells a different story, teeming with life that wants to regenerate if we simply stop interfering and partner with the underground ecosystem. Colin Sice's Australian farm pioneered pasture cropping, growing annual cereal crops and perennial pasture simultaneously. After a 1979 fire destroyed his Winona farm, Colin abandoned chemicals and developed no-till drilling of cool-season crops like oats into dormant warm-season native grasses, using strategic grazing to manage both. Research comparing Winona to his brother's conventional farm showed 83% native perennials versus 41% annuals, higher microbial counts, and improved soil carbon. Over 2,000 Australian farms now practice this approach. Eric Harvey advanced the concept on his 7,000-acre Gilgai farm. After discovering his body lacked essential minerals, a deficiency mirrored in his depleted soil, Eric combined sheep and cattle into a single grazing unit called a flerd, dividing his property into 196 paddocks. The animals' different grazing behaviors complement each other. Sheep prefer forbs, while cattle favor grass. In 7 years, native plant species increased from 7 to 136. In New Orleans, I explored blue carbon, the massive carbon stored in coastal wetlands and cypress swamps. Louisiana's wetlands vanish at one football field per hour because dams and levees have tamed the Mississippi River. Before 1900, 400 million metric tons of sediment reached the sea annually, replenishing delta wetlands. Today, less than 150 million metric tons make it to the coast. The MRGO Canal introduced salt water into freshwater wetlands, causing massive die-off. During Katrina, it earned the nickname Hurricane Highway as it amplified storm surge by 20-40%. Sarah Mack's company created the first protocol using carbon offsets to restore coastal wetlands, potentially pumping billions into Louisiana while mitigating climate change. Meanwhile, three flights up in Brooklyn's Greenpoint, Annie Novak tends Eagle Street Farm, the nation's first commercial rooftop farm. When asked if New York City can feed itself, she offers an unexpected response. Does New York want to? The quality of our air and water is protected by upstate organic growers, she explains. This modern agrarianism includes urban gardeners, local food consumers, and anyone doubtful of the corporate food system. What if carbon became an opportunity rather than a problem? Consider paying landowners $200,000 to double soil carbon in 10 years and letting them determine how. Carbon doesn't lie. It's measurable, and you can't increase it through land-degrading practices. Fund it with a small carbon tax, and just 2% of America's population could dramatically boost soil carbon. French researchers pioneered agrivoltaic systems, mounting solar panels 4 meters high, combining food and energy production. After three seasons, crops under half-density panels matched or exceeded those in full sun, while reducing water needs by 14 to 29%. This transforms the food versus fuel debate into abundance. In New Mexico's mountains, I discovered a healed headcut, an erosional feature that typically migrates upstream, destroying meadows. The cure was elegant: spruce logs in a Z pattern forcing water to slalom, dissipating erosive energy. Craig Sponholz, the restoration artist who designed it, embodied Aldo Leopold's insight that art is only the drama of the land's workings. This is regenerative thinking, seeing potential where others see problems. When we understand that soil is alive, that carbon is life's currency, that natural systems want to heal if we stop interfering, everything changes. The question isn't whether we can reverse atmospheric damage, but whether we'll choose abundance over scarcity, partnership over domination.